speaking against it. And I was very surprised at the number of students from the university. I'm going to play you a speech by one of them and an interview with one of them, as well as some more speeches that took place on Tuesday night against the curfew. There were a number of good points made by Supervisors Wormhout and Keeley, whom I otherwise, I have not had a lot of good things to say about the Board of Supervisors. I have a lot of bad things to say about Marty Wormhout as mayor, but I want to give her credit for articulate opposition to the current curfew law, and she speaks very well. In fact, I may be able to dredge up a segment or two from her her speeches on Tuesday night. The curfew is something we should organize against, and I had really hoped that UC students would be in the studio today. Several of them promised to show up. I had a problem with a court hearing this morning I had to go to, more about that later, which delayed me somewhat, but again, it looks like we have a case of people promising and then not showing. So all you people, time to look into your consciences, get guilt-tripped, and give a call to 427-3772. Here's a little bit from that curfew hearing of Tuesday night.
Hi, my name is Linda Love, and I'm the senior editor of the Third World and Native American Student Press Collective, as well as an undergraduate admissions intern at the University of California, Santa Cruz. First off, as a non-driving, bus-driving, undergraduate student at the University of California, until I turned 21, I had no reason to carry anything but two cards, my ATM card and my student ID. My student ID, as I would be more than happy to show you as much as I need this picture, has no age on it. It doesn't state how old I am. And so, therefore, I would definitely not appreciate the police here in Santa Cruz County to call my dad, who is a police officer in San Francisco, and ask exactly how old I am. So, I mean, that brings with it its own troubles. But I'm not the only student that only carries those two cards. And someone who's under the age of 21. And in fact, a lot of students at the University of California have no need to even get a California ID. But that's one issue. Going beyond the city on a hill that we live on, I think that we have to look at what problems this can cause. As an admissions counselor, as someone who's gone out into high schools to work with kids, what we have to look at is that by giving these kids misdemeanors, this could effectively disqualify them for admissions to many different colleges. We need to understand that. What is wrong with hanging out with your friends? And why should that bar you from admissions to a university? And that's a question that people have to answer. But it can, in fact, influence what will happen at the University of California, the Cal State system, as well as the private systems here. Beyond that, let's take a historical perspective. When you look at curfews, it is very similar to the Japanese internment. It is a reaction to a glorified mythical problem. A whole population of citizens during the 1940s were interned because of an immutable characteristic, and that was their Japanese ancestry. You were looking at people, youth, misdemeanor, because of an immutable characteristic the day that they were born. I urge you to vote against passing this curfew because ultimately it's unconstitutional, and beyond that, you're facilitating a reaction to problems in charge because they're trying to solve the problems. We need more clubs open, we need more academic counseling. Don't make it a crime to hang out with your friends, and don't make it a crime to be a student who's only carrying an ID. Student ID and
ATM
card.
I can't say what that is.
Okay, I'm speaking to
Belinda.
And Belinda, you just spoke and spoke about San Francisco, and your father was a police officer there. There was a curfew in San Francisco. What's the impact up there, as far as you know, and as far as your dad tells you?
Well, as far as what I know and what I've seen is that in fact a lot of police officers don't necessarily even enforce it because it's another thing to add to to the crimes that they actually have to arrest people for. They don't necessarily see hanging out or whatever you want to call freedom of association as a crime. They wait. They do have, I guess, well, the attitude that I've seen from my dad at least is that they have more important things to do than to tag teenagers for having to, you know, for sitting there and talking to their friends.
Do you know what this curfew actually involves as compared with the proposed Santa Cruz County curfew?
No, I'm not sure of the differences. I'm only vaguely schooled in the area.
Yeah, my understanding was it was passed in order to preempt a curfew that Mayor Jordan wanted passed when he was mayor.
True. But then again, you know, you've seen a change in the guard. You have a new police chief in. You have a new mayor who's very progressive. You have a new fire chief, and I think that you're going to see a lot of changes in San Francisco in the next 4 years. So hopefully the curfew law will be revoked.
But we're stuck in Santa Cruz.
Yep. And hopefully they'll come to see the light, but it's hard to tell. As of right now, we'll have to wait until the end of tonight.
Are there students prepared to demonstrate against this curfew and engage in protest action?
I'm honestly unsure of that. You'd probably have to ask someone from the Student Union Assembly. They're a little bit more organized around this. My friend works with the ACLU, and she asked me to come and speak. So
who's your friend?
Amy Dudovitz. She works with she's on the board of directors for the ACLU with Eleanor.
Well, thank you very much. Anything you want to add for our Free Radio Santa Cruz audience, which you may be speaking to more directly soon?
Well, just make sure you let the County Board of Supervisors know exactly how you feel about this curfew, because without your input, you know, and without them knowing what their constituency feels, they'll just vote whatever way they want.
Thank you. So here I am coercing this poor guy into talking on tape. What's your name, sir?
My name is John Heal.
And John, you're here at this curfew debate at the County Board of Supervisors. What drew you to it? What made you take time out?
I'm a member of the board of directors of the Neighborhood Association of Seacliff, which is in Aptos. And this is an issue that we have had some concern about. I'm not sure it's a serious problem in our community, but I know enough about it to know that there are incidents that have occurred, which means that teenagers who are out late at night, we sense a potential problem.
Mm-hmm. Are these teenagers from your own community or from other communities?
Probably both, although most of them seem to be from the community. And my perception is that there are more teenagers living in our community than there were a few years ago, just in sheer numbers. And so they're more visible. And if you've got more of them, if there are some who are causing trouble, why there are more going to show up in that category.
Well, you've already actually spoken to the board. I believe you spoke briefly already.
No, I haven't. One of our group will be doing so in a few...
I'm thinking of another neighborhood organization, which I think...
Yes, that's right. And I think that... I don't know if he presumed to speak for 4 hours on this. I think... I'm not even sure if we had a
Aptos organization, I believe.
Well, Aptos has 4 or 5 neighborhood associations. Mm-hmm. We function in some ways as a group of elected volunteers. The place of the supervisors have for the county, mm-hmm. because we're an unincorporated area. So we get involved in a lot of things that elected officials might.
Are you a native here or long-time resident?
No, we've been here about 7.5 years. I retired.
Originally from a large city or a smaller?
Well, I've lived mostly around large cities. The last one was St. Paul, Minnesota.
And were you struck at all by, was your opinion influenced at all by the last 4 or 5 speakers whom you heard?
I have... some of the people make valid points, I think, on both sides of the debate, and obviously the debate is being carried largely by the people who are opposed to the ordinance.
Thank you very much.
My name is Chris Mulock, and I live on Davenport, which is just off of UCSC, and I have here 22 letters written by the students in my high school English class, and opposing the curfew, which is being brought up today. And I just like to say myself, there's one of the biggest problems I've found here is that a lot of people who this is affecting don't even know that it's going on. I only found out about this afternoon. And as far as I've seen, the only people who are opposed to this are all people who have no effect on whatsoever. Everybody who's opposed to it is either not here or there's not many of us who knew it was going on. I'd like to really push it and get word out a little bit more. And also, a lot of times I'll wake up at night and around 2 a.m. I'll be hungry, I'll want some ice cream, and I'll walk down to 7-Eleven, which is about 15 minutes away from my house, and I'll get some ice cream. I just don't really think it's fair. It seems like, in a way, you're arresting us all and locking us up in our houses, because what my definition of an arrest is the imposed fee, imposing on one's will to move from place to another. And that's what this is. It seems to me exactly like arresting people from 11 p.m. to when this goes on. Also, didn't get rid of something sort of like this. As I recall, he killed a bunch of Jewish people. That seems to me like trying to better a situation by controlling those certain physical attributes. That's all this seems to be to me. It's trying to better a situation, I believe, crime in this valley, by trying to control people with certain physical attributes, that being under the age of 18. And I, for one, am really opposed to this, and I have read it.
Thank you. Can you give those to the clerk, please?
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
My name is Jay Marshall, and as you know, I'm the coordinator of the San Diego County Children's Commission. We was granted two of them appointed by the EU from each district and by the agency heads, and now we've got two youth representatives on the commission. Commissioner Isaac Stanton, who's 15, wanted to come, but too much homework tonight, so and I too wasn't feeling well. The Children's Commission is very interested in youth curfew ordinance and has been following the progression since you directed the show to look at that. And this Thursday, the regular commission meeting happened. This is on our agenda. In October, we intended to do a public forum so that people who are affected by the youth curfew ordinance proposal, mostly being youth and parents, and as you heard, parents do have some opinions about that. We wanted to do a forum in October to get some input. And during our early October meeting, Sheriff Tracy came and gave us some background about the youth curfew ordinance. And we was in discussing it with the sheriff, we felt that it would be better for the commission to host such a forum after the sheriff's department had done the work so that some of the questions could be answered and it could be put forward to parents and youth. The commission does intend to host such a forum in 3 to 4 weeks, and I just want to let you know that our intention would be to bring that public input back to the board to help you make a decision. So, I think it would be really important for you to give some time to listen to public input before the public education process happens. And so I'd like you to perhaps wait and hear what the recommendations might be from the commission representing the public that are most affected by this potential ordinance. This is a very important issue. It's something that we can take time on. Take time to look at, take time to give the public to look at. It's not like it's a dirt slide in the road. It's something you need to take time on. So I would suggest that you give it a little bit of process for the public and the youth and the parents with respect. I'll let you know that the results of the Children's Commission meeting was very good.
Thank you. Thank you. I will assume the crowd is the board, and we will take all of the people who are currently in line, and that will be the last person to come in back.
Get all people with bad backs.
Interrupting this rendition of speeches at the curfew hearing on last Tuesday night, January 9th, the last voice you heard was Linda LeMaster sitting in the far back asking Chairman Walt Simons if, what about people with bad backs, she said, pointing out she couldn't stand in line. Simon's response was essentially to say, proceed to the next speaker and to ignore her. So she moved a chair into the line so she could speak, and we kind of shoved the chair up slowly, kind of moving her along. Simons, to me, showed in this situation how different he was than previous chair of the board, Fred Keeley, who seemed to be making all kinds of attempts to include people when they raised their hands to speak. Simons, on the other hand, just wanted to cut debate short. Apparently he felt that, you know, with his 3 majority, he doesn't need to worry about the opinion of the public. Mainly, and also the opinion of the public seemed to be largely against the what he was doing. Anyway, the speakers continued. Their speeches were good. But you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrob Spears Broadside's call-in number for those who want to call in. And please call in. We can interrupt this tape at any point. I think it's worth listening to, but I think you're also worth listening to. 427-3772. And incidentally, there was a caller who queried and had the question, what can I do in terms of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is the organization I work with to dramatize homeless rights, but the right to sleep, the right to enter a store without harassment, the right to be served in a restaurant, the right to be treated as a human being in spite of your homeless or poor status, the right to sit down on the sidewalk if you want, provided you're not blocking traffic or harassing people, the right to panhandle if you don't bother people in the sense of abusing them or assaulting them. Give a call to 423-HUF if you want more details, 423-4833, and also call that number if you want to be on the show or if you have something you want said on the show and you haven't got time to be on the show. We'll be happy to record what you have to say and put it on the show. You can also, of course, show up at Taco Bell at 9:45 on the day that this show airs, which is Monday and Friday. We go on air at 10 in the morning, and you can show up at 9:45 down at Pacific and Laurel at Taco Bell. Regarding the question of what are the upcoming HUF activities, really, we're kind of not so much in the doldrums as we're trying to kind of organize to see what reports we're getting on the sleeping ban, to see what reports we're getting on restaurant discrimination. We'd like to set up a table downtown and start receiving those reports. We'd like to broadcast the reports of our poll for the Velvet Venom Awards. Velvet Venom Awards, you may remember, are the awards that we will be giving for the most distinguished bigot in the business field downtown. That will be, of course, broadcast as soon as we have tallied all the results, and we're still tallying them. And you're welcome to get your ballot. Just give a call to 423-HUF, 423-4833. We'll continue now with the curfew situation. For those who want to contact City Council and express your outrage at the hypocrisy of City Council in allowing this open-air shelter to be closed and allowing Mayor Rotkin to put the force of the city law behind this and allowing the sleeping ban to continue throughout the winter, where there's no legal place to sleep after 11, give a call to 429-3550, 429-3550. That's a 24-hour line. You can call that line at any time. Actually, we have another guest in the studio, Gina. Say hi, Gina. Just belly up to the microphone.
Hi.
And Gina, you're a former resident of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
True.
And you had some difficulties there. You want to talk a little bit about, actually, you worked with Marathon Mark, as I remember, in getting the tents up, so to speak. They had a situation where staff members could have tents up, but campers could not in the spring, and you and Mark were able to successfully get the situation where the right to keep tents up was extended. Is that right?
True.
So when did all that happen, and what have you been up to for the last 6 months, for heaven's sakes?
When did all that happen?
Yeah.
Gosh, last winter we really pushed to have our tents up in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't allowed to, staff members were only allowed to. And then in the summertime, we were allowed to. And it was a very, very good positive move. And we became very lenient at the end of the summer about taking tents down in the morning. You can have a tent up all day.
But I understand that this didn't happen out of the goodness of their hearts. There was a certain amount of organizing and protest and loud voices had to go into this. Is that accurate?
True. And now I am being harassed for my activism work there, which, you know, caused a little stir, but it was only myself, and I was under control. I went to jail for 2.5 hours. I got kicked out for 3 hours after that because I went back and started in at my activism
work. What was the background of this incident that you were jailed? When did this happen, and what precipitated that?
It happened in June, and they're taking out the couches that the youth gather around, and you know, youth are very important, especially youth that don't have a place, because I had a place to live, you know, at that age. And
how old are you?
I feel for them. I'm 22 years old.
Mm-hmm. But you're not too far away from younger days.
Not at all. I left home when I was 18, and when I see 15-year-olds out on the street, you know, they at least deserve couches, like a living room, you know, even though they have plastic walls, and sometimes not even walls at all, and ropes in the couches, you know? They deserve that. They deserve more.
So when you saw these couches being removed, I guess we're talking about the Homeless Community Resource Center area, or we're talking about the adjacent Coral Street open-air shelter area?
We're talking about both.
Uh-huh.
The couches have been moved onto the fields in front of the shelter area.
Mm-hmm.
And the rigs were actually in one of the couches.
Mm-hmm.
Although the other couches were in perfectly good condition, they still wanted to take
them. By rigs, you mean like syringe, hypodermic needles?
Yes. I wanted the person who had been sleeping on that couch that night to be told, you know, that they had found syringes in the couch and that they needed to, you know, to not do syringes or just be confronted in something, because it was an older man and he did take those couches away from the youth who like to gather.
So how many couches are we talking with did they attempt to remove? Or did they remove
any? They removed four couches.
And you,
four,
you,
five
this
couches.
Upset you because you felt that those were resources that youth were using, indeed, that you had used in the past?
Yes, and everybody had slept on them that night. They were all filled that night, and nobody had complained about lice or skis, or they wouldn't be on the couches anymore.
Or been poked by a hypodermic needle.
Yeah.
Now, and so whose decision was it to remove those couches?
It was Papa John. The man who volunteered.
Employee of Isaac.
And he was an employee also.
Is he employee of Karen Gillette or of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter Riot Citizens Committee?
He's kind of a big volunteer mostly. And it was also, God, I even forget his name, been there 3.5 months.
But it seemed to be a decision to remove the couches kind of came from the lower echelons.
Oh, Mike Sentinel. Yeah, he was an employee of the Homeless Resource Center. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He also made the decision with Papa John to remove the couch on the road. I actually one of the people that was the only person that didn't have to take my bed off the field. Everybody else had their bed off the field, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. I refused to take my bed off the field. They were going to let me slide, but it felt so bad for the other campers that when I saw these couches being removed, I said, no, I'm not going to take the couches out. You know, those are for youth. And
now, what do you mean by take bed off the field? You mean that there were people had to clear the field every day at that time? What was the situation?
Yeah, they had to clear the fields every day.
I see. This was around June. So there was a situation where people could not leave their stuff there during the day? They had to remove it from the field during the day?
Every day. They'd have to remove everything from the field and put it inside this gated area.
And was it secure in that area?
Not really, no. This was just a fenced-in area, and it wasn't even a permanent fencing. The fencing moved.
Did you ever lose any property because of that?
Everybody lost property in there. And people complained that they got lice and scabies from putting it inside of there next to other people's stuff.
So, are you saying that at some point people began to rebel against this and decided to keep their stuff on the field?
Yes.
About when did that begin to happen, do you know?
That began to happen more as the staff was lenient more.
Like, was that after this couch incident happened, after the sofa bed stuff?
What do you mean?
Well, in other words, when the sofa beds were being removed, the incident we're talking about, and we're going to kind of go into more detail on, there was still this tendency to clear the field by the staff.
Yes, they had cleared the entire field of everything except my bed.
It was after June that they became somewhat more lenient, allowed people to... Did they become lenient, or were people just become more insistent about leaving stuff, or was it a combination of the two?
It was a combination of the two,
uh-huh.
Yes. And you know, after I left, every time I went by there, the tents were up. They could have them up all day long.
And were there a number of voices that advocated on that behalf? I know you and Mark were often talking about that.
Definitely. And Mark Peterson and John Hamilton and, you know, the Homeless Resource Center, ISSP crew that is there. John Earth. Everybody, you know, who's anybody. Visual Bear had been moving there.
So, but let's go back to the day of the sofas. So Papa John and Sentinel Mike wanted to remove the sofas, as you tell the story, and were in fact doing so, hauling them away. And then you said you protested this.
Yes, totally.
And what form did your protest take?
Well, I, you know, repeatedly asked why they were taking them away since Karen Gillette said that they could keep them there.
When did Karen Gillette say that?
She said this 3 weeks earlier. Brayton, this man, really wanted to keep the corner there, and they were considering taking, you know, all of the couches out. The corner being where a bunch of youth gather, and there are a bunch of couches all facing each other like a room.
Mm-hmm. And so Karen Gillette had said,
so I closed the gate. Basically, they had loaded some of the couches into the truck, and I said, no, don't take the couches. You know, I tried to, like, get them to stop moving the couches into the truck, and when they didn't do that, there were so many of them. You know, I backed off being the only person who was protesting at that time. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to close the gate a few times, and Papa John gave me some resistance there. And I just, you know, kept asking questions and saying, why are you taking the couches? Karen said that the couches could stay. Mm-hmm. I see no reason why you're taking the couches. And he said that Karen didn't say that, that she didn't want the couches there, that they leave all the time because they are full of bugs. And I said, well, these particular couches aren't full of bugs. People were just sleeping on them last night and were comfortable. And the people nodded their heads. Yes, I was comfortable last night on the couch, and I know I am not itching. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to wipe things in my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen was at a meeting, and it had not gotten back. I just kept looking for her car, and she wasn't there, so I went in to talk to Mike Bustos, who runs the office.
Second in command at the Homeless Community Resource Center, or certainly one of the workers, their operations worker, perhaps.
Yeah, I told him what was going on, and he said, you know, yes, Karen did say the couches could be there, but, you know, I'll go out there and tell them that, and he did, and Mike said, no, we're taking the couches, and Mike said, well, you know, we have to wait for Karen to come back, and she still wasn't back, and so pretty much they called the police then. They called the police because I just kept saying, no, do not take the couches away, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you threaten anybody with physical violence?
No, not at all. Papa John really gave me some resistance in closing the gate because the truck was on the field. The only way to get out was through the gate. Mm-hmm. And so I closed the gate, and then he tried to put it open, and I said no. And then so his hands were in resistance, and I locked the gate. But Papa John and I didn't have any problems with each other.
Mm-hmm.
We've had problems with each other actually in the past and gotten into arguments, but it was because of his foul language. Mm-hmm. He actually called me really bad words.
Which we would never, of course, hear on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
True.
Fuck no.
So, really, I mean, it's really horrible, you know.
What were you called by Papa John?
He called me a hag and a wench.
A hag and a wench.
And a witch.
And a witch.
And he went on.
Mm-hmm.
It gets more colorful.
I see. Well, perhaps we can invite Papa John on here to give the other side. In fact, if you're listening, Papa John, through
He knows this. He knows this. But I call him names back. You know, I have my ways of dealing with things, and it just isn't this way. You know, it isn't this way of, like, kicking someone out. You know, usually handle my things pretty upfront and personal with the person. And John and I like each other enough that he was like, I see, you know, I know where you come from, but I don't. And I'm going to try to open the gate. And I was like, no. And he was letting me close the gate. It was kind of this little tag team, like, kind of open the gate. And, oh, look, Gina's closing the gate. You know, so it wasn't that bad. But then John, the man who works for the ISSP, he called the police. When the police got there, I refused to leave the property.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had not done anything wrong. I just was asking questions. And
you were arrested?
And I was arrested and put in jail for 2.5 hours. And then when I got back, I continued my activism work by going up to Mike Sentinel and saying, you know, I was just asking you questions. You did not need to react like that and call the police. You know, I spent 2.5 hours in jail, and I am outraged. I cannot believe that this happened. I was asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't even answering my questions. This is what I said to him. And
what was the...
He still didn't get it, mm-hmm. you know. And so then he went and said to Karen, you know, kick her off the field. And Karen said, Gina, you're off the field because you know, you can't come back until later on tonight at 6 o'clock.
And did you then return?
Yeah, then I stayed on the field for a little while and, like, messed up my dog's leashes. And she had to come back out on the field and say, Gina, leave for 3 hours. And I was like, no, I didn't do anything wrong, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was asking questions. Your staff failed to answer my questions. And they took the couches. She said 2 weeks ago that they could have. She said they said that they had bugs on them. I said, they did not have bug on them. They could have gone to the people that had slept on them that night and said, you know, hey, were there bugs on them? And they would have said, no, they love the couches. They were styly. Mm-hmm. One of them was a 1930s couch. Had like the kind little claw peg leg foot thing dogs that hang off this, you know, that they stand on. And it was really kind, black, like a velvet couch.
So,
oh,
snake. Right. Were you camping in a field at that time in the open air shelter field?
Yes, I did. I returned to the field at 6 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And stayed there.
And did any problems develop as a consequence of that, or what happened then?
No, pretty much that's my only activism work I've ever done there. All the charges were dropped against me because the police know they hurt me more than I hurt them. They slammed me on the ground face first and had to hog-tie me.
Yet you were... Oh, really? This was in this incident where you were dragged off
and
the door?
Dropped the charges because they knew that they hurt me.
Do you know the names of the officers who made the decision to hog-tie you?
Gosh, I don't.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever file a complaint with the Citizens Police Review Board about it?
No, I don't, because like I said, you know, I don't really feel like justice is served, and I don't really want to put forth my energy unless I know that it will be heard in a positive way. I'm a very sensitive person, and, you know, I didn't have any scratches on me or nothing, and I felt okay. I just really was happy to be out of jail. I hate to be in confinement for 2.5 hours. I went crazy.
So then you continued living in the field for how much longer?
I lived in the field, and I've been with there for a year and a half, since last October. I've been there, and I haven't been there actually since September 25th.
Now, were you then, what happened on September 25th that made you decide not to return to the field?
September 25th, there's this man who, I guess is the parking lot security guard. He showed up from Las Vegas with his two sons and wife, and he had taken over this corner of the parking lot where people usually enter through to get to Highway 9, and now they have to go all the way around the house and through the fields, and it's just a longer path to get out of the place. They don't open any of the side gates now. You have to walk a straight line directly out to Coral Street and then around if you want to go to Highway 9. And so I, you know, really didn't understand why these people had decided to take over this corner. And they weren't very nice either, because there's this little tiny female dog that runs around the field. She used to, and she was in heat. Mm-hmm. And all the male dogs would just bark and bark and bark every morning. And there's a big problem with this dog because of the noise. And this dog ended up in this corner and hung out there with his other little dog, Ken's dog,
mm-hmm.
the parking lot security guard.
So... cutting to the chase.
Okay, cutting to the chase. My dog, whenever we'd get off the leash, my dog's a very young, male, active dog, was very interested in little Featherhead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Thunder would run over there all the time.
Thunder was your dog.
Yeah, but apparently Ken had decided that his little dog was now Featherhead's boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
And that my dog wasn't allowed to go over there, even though the owner of Featherhead and I had agreed that we would like to meet them.
It's a dog's life. Go ahead.
And so, to make a long story short, Thunder runs over there, and I try to get in, and Ken's son yells at me. I don't even know Ken's son's name, but he screams at me, "Gina, get your dog out of here!"
Mm-hmm.
Totally is angry at me, and I was like, "Whoa, you are tripped!" You know, that little dog shouldn't run on the field every morning. It's no wonder my little dog runs over there. You know, because he's like, "Oh, Feather gets to be free every morning."
Right.
You know, it's only natural he comes and runs over here once. It was one time.
So what happened then between you and this group of people?
Okay, so I had noticed that this, you know, his son had an attitude. And then it was a few weeks later, a few weeks or something. And one night I went to my locker to get my shoes out. I was going to go for a walk. And I heard something catch my attention over in the corner. It sounded like a woman's voice. I looked over. It was my friend Jenny. This is his son's girlfriend. But when I first met her, mm-hmm. she had this other boyfriend, and so maybe there was some tension there because of this situation or whatever. But I went over there and said, Jenny, are you the only woman over here? She said, yeah. I said, oh. Because I thought I heard a woman's voice. It didn't sound like yours at all. And then his son said, Gina, get the fuck out of here. And then I was like, wow, I'm not going to leave, you know. And then it was so annoying, and I just said, you know, all right, whatever, and went back to my locker. Right. Got my shoes and my socks out, and then I just decided that that was way too poor of an attitude to take over the only spot where people can get out, you know, and make like a really nice little shortcut to Highway 9.
So you went back to confront the
man
who had been verbally abusive to you?
Yes, very verbally abusive. Mm-hmm. And so I went over there, and I stood 4 feet from their area, and it was maybe more like 6 feet. It was three lockers.
And so then what happened?
The
then?
Lockers are 2 feet apiece. And it was on the other side of the three lockers, and then this giant round cement pillar.
What happened, Jane?
So on the other side of the pillar, three lockers in between us and the pillar, I'm on the other side of the pillar.
And?
I'm totally not in his space. Mm-hmm. I put my shoes down, and I put my socks down, and mm-hmm. I started to put on my first sock.
Uh-huh.
And he said, no, get out of here. And I said, no, I'm not leaving. This is my area. These are lockers. I will stay here.
Uh-huh.
You know, and your son will not be rude to me like that again. And he said, no, get out of here. And he got up from his chair. They were watching television in the corner.
Uh-huh.
We aren't allowed to have electricity on the field, but he is. Mm-hmm. And still, he did not tell me that he was the parking lot security guard. I only found out later. So he's completely unprofessional, not telling me that he even has anything to do with the Homeless Resource Center. He comes at my shoes, picks up my shoes, tries to take them away from me. And I said, no, I'm not leaving. And I take my shoes from him. He slapped me across the face.
Ah, okay. And then?
I saw Jenny out of the corner of my eye, and I was like, Jenny, sister, what are you doing with this man? You know?
What did Jenny say to all this?
Jenny didn't say anything because that's not really what I said. I just looked out of the corner of my eye at her like, mm-hmm. Jenny, what are you doing with this man? You know, I mean, his father just slapped me across the face. I cannot even believe it. And so from there, I just, I started hitting him. I was barefooted and to keep him from furthering his attack.
And he ended up with some damaged ribs, right?
Yeah. He might have broke his own ribs while he was slamming me on the ground. And because his son let their little dog off the leash mm-hmm. that sits a foot off the ground, and he managed to bite me behind my left ear.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were thrown to the ground by this man.
Yes.
And then, and what happened afterward? Did people come and separate the two of you?
Yeah. Then we were pulling each other's hair, and we were on the ground, and we couldn't really get to each other because he was behind me.
But did people separate you?
Yes. No, Dominic broke it up. And I just got off the ground and said, call the police.
And were the police called?
Yes, they were.
And what happened then?
They came in 10 minutes. I had put on my shoes by that point. And they said that they would take my statement. I told them what happened. That he slapped me across the face, you know. And mm-hmm. that, you know, all I know is that
did
we ended up
did you try to file charges against him?
And his dog bit me behind the ear.
Did you try to file charges against
yes,
him?
Yes, I did.
And what did the cops say then?
The cops said, okay, we're going to hear his side of the story also.
Mm-hmm.
And so they all huddled in this little circle full of four witnesses, all his family
uh-huh.
and friends, you know.
What about your friend, what's her name?
Who?
The woman.
Jenny.
Who, Jenny, did she take your side?
No, she did not. She took his side.
I see.
Even though she saw a plane. So
then what was the outcome of this? Were you arrested? Was anyone arrested?
No one was arrested because none of the people could determine what was going on because no one witnessed what had happened. Nobody, you know, in command witnessed it. But they were going to give him a ticket and me a ticket.
And what did they end up doing?
And then we'd settle it in court. Well, they ended up, John, the man who works for the ISSP,
Papa
decided,
John
no, different John,
uh-huh.
different John. He decided that I should be 86 from the property forever.
I see.
He said, Jeannie, you're out of here tonight. Pack your stuff up, you're leaving. I was like, what? You know, I'm a homeless woman. I totally fear for my security. I need my security. I'm a Capricorn, for crying out loud. And, you know, nobody tells me I don't have a place to sleep.
So were you both issued tickets?
No, we weren't. Because then I said, oh, no, drop the whole thing, let's just forget it happened, you know. I'm all, like, hot. I don't really, you know, I'm not really feeling anything, but I could tell that I'm all intact and everything. And John apparently felt all right also, and I just said, okay, let's just drop the whole thing, you know, because I am not going to leave tonight.
Right, and what happened?
I can't even believe they're taking us aside.
And then what happened?
And then...
Were you allowed to stay the night?
No, I wasn't. No, they kicked me off the property. They said, return in the morning. When I returned in the morning, Karen Gillette said that I had broken her employee's ribs and that I was never to come on the property again. And I said, Karen, he slapped me across the face. I was only acting in self-defense.
And what did she say to that?
She said, Gina, you broke his ribs. I cannot even believe it. I was like, you did not witness this, Karen. He slapped me across the face. Barefooted women did not attack booted older men around all their family. Especially this family who's totally aggro and who would have all attacked me. I would not be intact if I had attacked, you know.
And you attempted to file a complaint about this issue?
Yes, I did. I filled out a piece of paper, just told my side of the story, and then told a brief explanation of why I think it happened.
This is the paper you presented to me that we gave to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, Paul Meursault.
In the October meeting.
At the board meeting in October, late October.
Yes.
And what happened since then?
Since then, Paul told me that he gave Karen the grievance on Christmas. I saw him at the vet's hall, and he told me he gave Karen the grievance. And then, a week ago, my mother came up to the property we're staying on in the woods in Scotts Valley and said, Karen said, because she also stays at the shelter, my mother, she said, Karen said that Paul lost the grievance. Mm-hmm. I was like, ah. So wanting to get this immediately over, she told me on Friday, I went and made a copy of the entire thing. Saturday, turned it into her, you know, first thing Monday morning. This last Monday.
You turned it in and you heard from her yesterday. What did she tell you then?
She told me that there's a meeting today at 3:15.
At the Homeless Community Resource Center?
Yes.
So actually there is, and you, are you inviting the public to come to this hearing?
Oh, completely inviting the public, because she is being completely unjust. She's saying I have a violent criminal history, and it is untrue. You know, the only violence that I've ever been a part of there
has gone both ways,
which is why the charge is
going
to drop.
It's a significant issue, Gina, because we have a situation where you are being barred from the free meal, right?
Yes.
And you're being barred from the only legal program to sleep in, which is the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program's Church and Armory program.
Yeah, not to mention the showers.
And the use of the lockers, the showers, all these things are denied you?
Yes. No laundry.
So...
I smell.
So, so this is happening at 3:15 at the Homeless Community Resource Center at... What's the address? Do you know the address of this place?
115 Coral Street.
For those who are interested, they can come. I'm also going to call Karen Gillette on the phone and invite her comments on this issue in case she wishes to give an accurate perspective. Of course, she may not have heard this entire story. While I'm doing that, I'll play a little bit more of the curfew tape. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. On the line is Gina...
Bram.
Gina Bram?
Yes, Gina Bram.
And Gina is... How'd you describe yourself, Gina? What sums up your essence most fully?
I'm a very beautiful person.
There you go.
That has worked with children all her life and has no violent history aside from my activism work in Santa Cruz. And even then, I have no violent history. I picked up bagels on the sidewalk. I wasn't even serving food at the city hall in San Francisco and went to jail for 8 hours there.
That's certainly a violent activity, serving bagels.
Yes, it's just like me to resist. I got resisting arrest.
I think the two of us went to jail together, wasn't that true?
They dropped the charges.
Yeah, they dropped the charges against us, but I think we were in jail. That was 1993. Well, let's see if we can get Karen on the line to get her point of view.
Oh, yeah.
We've seen each other before. I know you're a pretty dangerous criminal.
Not at all.
I'm vice chair of the Community Election Board. As stated in my letter to you, we encourage... postponement of the proposed curfew ordinance. And not take any action until the State Supreme Court decides on the Bakersfield case. CAT further recommends that assurance must be made that certain youth populations are not the sole target, scapegoats of this proposed ordinance. Furthermore, as a concerned citizen in this county, I am concerned that there are no programs providing alternatives for youth that are forced out of their homes due to an unsafe home environment, which is the case in San Jose. We need to carefully consider what we are proposing to do with our youth.
Thank you for your comment.
My name is Peyton Lopez. I'm a member of the Scotts Valley City Council, also a member of the Criminal Justice Council that has considered this ordinance. And I just want to share, especially in response to some of the supervised abuses questions, our experience in Scotts Valley. We considered this several meetings ago and had a report by our police chief. And he explained that approximately 90% of the cases, the parents were not aware that the children were out where they were. They thought they were in their friend's home or at an activity. They didn't know if they were hanging out. They appreciated the call. Most of the cases took care of themselves, and that is even a problem. So it was a tool that the parents found to be very useful in maintaining their parental relationship and guiding their children. So I just want to say that it can be used, and I know members of law enforcement are doing a lot of the deputies very well. I know what their attitude is towards children, towards youth, and I know how they're treated, and I have no problem in allowing our deputies to have that kind of discretion, to use that as a tool to help to deal with kids on the criminal justice system. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Doug Wood, and I want to thank you, first of all, for taking the time to hear the rest of the community. I was, however, a little disappointed as a former UCSC student and someone who believes in the community involved in government to hear that two of the supervisors seem to have already made up their minds without asking questions and hearing from the community. I voted for Sharon Tracy for several reasons, but like so many other people did. But one of them was his thing on community policing. And this seems to be a perfect example of that policy that you put forward to give the sheriff a chance to show what he can do. It seems like it involves the parents in decision making, and it provides a means for the community to stem the tide of what seems to be a prevalent progress in crime. And I would say that it is gangs and graffiti and things like that moving through this area. I come from Stockton, which you probably all know is the Hamburg River capital of the country, and is full of a lot of gang activity. I lived in a nice part of town and know about those firsthand.